morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case, United States v. White. Mr. Farrar.
May it please the Court, on behalf of the appellant, United States, my name is Michael Ferrara. The district court's order of acquittal was an error, and the jury's verdict finding defendant guilty should be reinstated. Following a trial conducted without error, the reasonable jury returned a guilty verdict, finding that defendant had solicited harm to Mark Hoffman when he posted in all capital letters to his white supremacist website Mark Hoffman's photo, name, address, birthday, work, home, and cell numbers, cat's name, the race of his live-in partner, along with the description that Hoffman was a gay, Jewish, enemy of white supremacy responsible for the conviction of Matt Hale. The evidence presented was more than sufficient to justify a reasonable jury to find both elements of the offense had been established beyond a reasonable doubt. As the Supreme Court held as recently as last week, the only question on review is whether the jury's finding was so insupportable as to fall below the threshold of bare rationality. First, the jury was provided with evidence that established by an objective standard that a reasonable and informed reader of Overthrow would understand the website as a whole to be a solicitation to harm Mark Hoffman.
And I assume you're going to get into the best facts in the record that support that finding, because White didn't expressly call for someone to injure Juror A, right? And there were no witnesses that testified they understood that the two Juror A posts were solicitation.
That is correct, Your Honor. The solicitation was formed by the totality of the circumstances. First, the information that was provided with respect to Mark Hoffman, both identifying him through his personal information, what he looked like, what his name was, and how to find him, but then importantly, identifying him as an enemy of white supremacy responsible for the conviction of Matt Hale. The evidence that established by an objective standard that a solicitation was made in order to harm Mr. Hoffman was the prior post from the defendant specific to the Hale case, in which the defendant expressly stated that all those involved in the Hale prosecution deserved to die. In addition to that, on the same website, the defendant provided other people's personal identifying information with explicit direction that those people should also be killed, including posts entitled Kill Richard Warman and Lynch the Gen of Six. In addition, the Hoffman posts were immediately adjacent to and intertwined with postings and photographs having to do with then-presidential candidate Barack Obama, in which the president's face or on the president's face were superimposed swastika-shaped crosshairs along with the caption, "Kill this N-word," with a question mark. And it was the defendant himself who demonstrated his belief that the website had solicited others to harm Hoffman, as evidenced by his later efforts to call off such harm from violent white supremacists such as the creators. As the author of the Hoffman Post and the creator and administrator of Overthrow.com, the defendant was the ultimate informed reader. The defendant's stated conclusion that violent white supremacists like the creators would see the website and recognize it as an attack was highly probative and supported the jury's conclusion that other reasonable informed readers would reach the same conclusion, that the website and that information was intended to ask others to go seek out Mark Hoffman and do his harm.
Well, how important are the phrases another person and such other person in the statute? Does the identity of the other person have to be proven to sustain a conviction?
It does not, Your Honor. What is important here is that the defendant believed that he was soliciting a class of people that the defendant believed were violent and capable to act in this instance. Evidence of that was also presented to the jury.
Well, there haven't been any cases that have identified a class of persons where there have been convictions sustained, correct? Because usually there's some specific person that testifies, "I was solicited." Or
yes, Your Honor. The general principle is that a specific person is identified as having received the solicitation. But the important distinction is that it's the defendant putting that information out there to a person that he believes is going to act on it that's important. some analogies are to the case that prompted this action, United States versus Hale. In that case, the actual chance of Judge Lefkoe being harmed was virtually zero because the person solicited was cooperating with law enforcement. Other examples of the same type of thing are United States versus Gabriel, in which the person solicited was an undercover agent, as well as United States versus Stewart, in which the proposed person who was going to do the harm didn't even exist. It was an imaginary brother-in-law that was created for the purpose of that case. The jury was also presented with evidence that allowed them to properly find the existence of circumstances strongly corroborative of the defendant's intent to solicit. And here again, it's the totality of this evidence that is important. The evidence can be characterized in many ways, including in the non-exhaustive factors that are listed in the committee notes to Section 373, as explained further by this court in United States versus Gabriel.
Well, let me ask you this. If someone posted a hit list on their Facebook page and all of their Facebook friends could see it, would that be a solicitation under 373?
It would depend, Your Honor, I think is the most direct answer. In this particular instance, these posts did not stand by themselves. These postings describing Mark Hoffman in these derogatory terms as an enemy of white supremacy, along with his personal identifying information, wasn't posted in a vacuum or in an innocuous atmosphere. Quite the opposite. These postings were made on a white supremacist website that was littered with other examples of both express calls to action as well as other instances where it was clear from the totality of those circumstances that the defendant's intent here was to solicit harm, and an objective and informed reader of Overthrow would understand that that's what the defendant was asking.
So getting back to the Facebook hit list example, what if it was posted, the world would be a better place without John Stewart in it? Would that be enough for solicitation?
In a complete vacuum such as that, Your Honor, that would be a much more difficult case. But again, that was not the case here at all. The context of that Facebook page would, of course, be important by the direct terms of the statute to establish those circumstances strongly corroborative of intent. Again, the evidence here was not presented in a vacuum like that at all.
Have there been other prosecutions based on this website, especially the more explicit threats?
Yes, Your Honor. The Overthrow.com website was the basis of additional charges that were brought in the Western District of Virginia, charging the defendant.
Any against White or against other people?
Against this same defendant, Your Honor, yes. William White was charged in Virginia with interstate threats and forms of obstruction of justice with respect to the many of the same posts on which the government relied as circumstances strongly corroborative of the defendant's intent here. And in addition to just simply...
And what happened to that case?
The defendant was convicted of those counts. One of the counts, the district court granted the defendant's Rule 29 motion, and that the government appealed that to the Fourth Circuit, and the Fourth Circuit recently affirmed the district court's decision with respect to the Rule 29 of that count.
And that count, was that that wasn't a 373, or was it?
It was not, Your Honor, and that is an important distinction to be made. The count that was in which the Rule 29 was granted, which was later affirmed, was a threat count. As the court is well aware, the elements of a threat and a solicitation are very different. The specific count that was in which the Rule 29 was granted were communications involving Richard Warman. In its opinion affirming the district court's Rule 29 decision, the court found that the principal message expressed in Defendant White's communications was that someone else should kill Richard Warman. That decision did not speak to whether those Warman posts could have formed a solicitation, which was the question for this jury. And this jury, based on the totality of the evidence, reasonably found that a solicitation had been made. Now, in addition to simply the information, or I'm sorry, getting back to the factors, as this court listed in Gabriel, the defendant repeatedly solicited harm to Mark Hoffman. The postings were made on three separate occasions. Not only were they made on three separate occasions, when Northwestern University took steps to block a photograph the defendant had posted on his website, defendant got a copy of that photo and embedded it in his website such that it could not be removed. further defendant persisted and continued in the solicitation by leaving these Hoffman posts and the rest of the context and meaning-providing posts up on his website for a period of approximately 1 month until the website was taken down during the execution of the search warrant. The defendant gathered tools in the preparation of this offense. In this case, it was information that the defendant gathered. There is testimony that the defendant had to go to several sources, relatively obscure sources, including court transcripts and the victim's student welcome page when he was an associate dean at Northwestern University. The defendant then verified that information by calling the victim to verify both his identity and some of the information that was obtained. As Your Honor has already raised, there was also evidence of the audience or recipients of this solicitation. And again, what is important here is that the defendant himself believed that he was reaching an audience that was capable of acting. The most direct and most powerful evidence of that were defendant's efforts after he realized that law enforcement had become involved in this matter to call off the creators and call off other violent white supremacists to prevent them from harming Hoffman. It was absolutely reasonable for the jury to infer that when defendant attempted to call off those actions later, that the defendant actually intended for that harm to be, for that harm to happen when he posted the information before he was aware of the direct law enforcement involvement in investigation. The jury's conclusion in that regard is further supported by additional evidence related to the Matt Hale prosecution. In the wake of Judge Lefkoe's family being murdered, the defendant posted, on overthrow.com, that he was in possession of personal identifying information of the prosecutors and agents involved in that, in the prosecution of Matt Hale. And the defendant expressly stated in that instance that he was going to refrain from posting that information due to the likelihood of action. It was perfectly reasonable for the jury to infer that the defendant was therefore aware of the power of posting personal identifying information of those involved in the Hale prosecution to his white supremacist website, especially when that information is presented with the further description that in this case Hoffman was an enemy of white supremacy, was Jewish, was gay, and was responsible for the prosecution of Matt Hale. In reviewing the sufficiency of this evidence, the court committed several errors. The most pervasive error was the court's failure to review the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution. Again, as the Supreme Court announced just last week in Coleman versus Johnson, the standard on review does not permit a court to engage in the type of fine-grained parsing that the court did here. And in fact, what the district court really did in this instance was not list the conclusions and inferences that must have been drawn by the jury in reaching their verdict and explain why those were unreasonable. Instead, what the district court did here was it drew its own conclusions, it drew its own inferences in direct contravention to those of the jury's, found that those were the only conclusions that could have been drawn and used that as the basis for its acquittal. In addition, the court's entire analytical framework was flawed. The court explicitly reviewed the evidence in two parts, first viewing just the Hoffman post in isolation and then effectively viewing everything else. In so doing, the court erroneously discredited the evidentiary value of the additional context provided by the post and the evidence of the what was termed the stand-down evidence where defendant attempted to get the creators and other violent white supremacists to not act. Specifically, the court erred in finding that this evidence was diminished by both the passage of time and the location on the website. The court's conclusions in this regard were again, in contravention to the testimony presented to the jury. The case agent testified that she viewed the website while it was still on the Internet and that she was very easily able to find the posts that were entered into evidence by clicking around on the website and did not need the benefit of the forensic software that she later employed, as was stated by the district court. One final concrete example of the court's impermissible drawing of inferences was the court's conclusion that the evidence of the stand-down evidence was not, in fact, evidence of his intent, but rather evidence that something unforeseen had occurred here and he was attempting to get those other violent white supremacists to stand down so no action would be taken. It's not uncommon at all that multiple inferences can be drawn from the same set of facts. Again, as the court explained in Coleman, the conclusions that can be drawn and the inferences are for the jury to decide, and it was not for this court to draw its own inferences contrary to those of the juries, which then formed the basis of the acquittal. So if there's no additional questions from the panel, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Farrar. Mr. Sanner?
May it please the Court, Nishay Sen and Chris Shepard on behalf of the appellee William White and cross-appellant. Members of this Court, the District Court did not err in granting a Rule 29 judgment of acquittal after the close of the case, because what the Court did in rendering its opinion in this matter is it looked at the evidence presented and determined that if you look at the two elements that are required for the solicitation case, neither was the post a solicitation, nor was there intent shown by cooperative evidence. And as this Court has already indicated, first of all, whether or not this was solicitation, as Judge Williams pointed out, there was nobody specifically solicited in this case. If you look at the cases that the government cites for its position that a solicitation took place, you have the Matthew Hale case, which is U.S. versus Hale, in which Matthew Hale actually goes to the bodyguard to solicit someone to harm Judge Lefkoe. U.S. versus.
You can't have a general solicitation.
I'm sorry, Judge?
You can't have a general. There can't be a general solicitation.
There could be a general solicitation.
Inviting the whole world to do something.
Well, I think there'd have to be. Again, it goes back to the objective standard: is the person that the communication is intended to, or what is quote unquote the solicitation, someone who would act? If we apply that standard that the court has set, this objective standard, whether or not something is a solicitation, you can look at the facts in this case and the evidence, the witnesses that the government called. Two people who view Overthrow.com, who are members of the party, who in this situation would be the objective receiver of this, whether or not they would take it to solicitation. Both of them testified that neither one of them took this post, which only puts personal information, personal identifiers of Mr. Hoffman up on the site. Information that is readily available in other public spheres such as Northwestern website, the motion that Hale filed, that they did not take this as a solicitation. Those are the people this court to look, and what Judge Adelman did is look to those two people who are the recipients of this statement or so-called solicitation, and they didn't take it as a solicitation, and those are the readers of Overthrow.com who the government says is the target audience.
But isn't it for the jury to decide whether to believe those witnesses?
Well, it's for the jury to decide if there's credible or if there's evidence to support the two elements of the crime. Here, there is no evidence.
You don't need testimony from people solicited.
Well, there has to be a solicitation first.
Yes, but you can infer that from the nature of the statement. If someone says, you know, I am soliciting for murder, you don't have to have people testify that what they understood that to mean.
But if you're looking at the objective, reasonable standard, here they put on evidence to support the standard they were trying to meet. And their own standard is rejected by the people who are the viewing audience.
No, well, but you're saying that the judge could make a credibility determination about these people who testified that they were did not consider this a solicitation.
Well, but this is not
material evidence, but it's not decisive.
Well, it's evidence that's direct. It's not circumstantial evidence. When these two witnesses take the stand and say, we did not take this as a solicitation, that is what they testify to. And unless the jury in its own determination finds that they're both lying, even though they specifically said and there was nothing
to
impeach these.
Might not believe them, right?
Well, but the jury could have also decided this case on fear, Judge, and they could have not listened to any of the evidence whatsoever.
So you're saying that if there's testimony that some people did not take this as a solicitation, that requires acquittal?
Judge, what I'm saying is the evidence.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes, because yes the evidence no. presented
is that
in this case.
What you're saying?
As
yes,
presented
is
in this
that,
case, yes,
no.
I am.
Answer yes or no.
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, I don't agree with you.
Well, Judge, you don't have to agree, but if you look at what was presented in this case, you're going to try to go outside of the evidence presented in this
he
case.
He has to agree if you don't want to win.
I don't. But I haven't agreed with them multiple times.
I want to follow up on what Judge Posner is saying. You know, I mean, there is more here than just those two witnesses because we have statement that's made on Overthrow.com that everybody needs to be assassinated. We have the posting that Juror A convicted Hale. We have the home address. We have him calling off people when he realizes there's an investigation. I mean, why isn't that enough for solicitation? Because the First Amendment does protect certain rights, but it doesn't protect criminal solicitations categorically.
That's correct, Judge, but the First Amendment does protect the posting of personal information.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does, Judge.
No idea.
There's case law. Sheehan.
You mean I can't have an unlisted phone number?
You can have an unlisted phone number, but if I can find it online, what's stopping me from posting on my website? If I can find that information in public record. I'm sorry, Judge?
If I have an unlisted phone line, then I'm concealing personal contact information. And you say that's a violation of the Constitution.
Well,
violation of the First Amendment, because personal contact, my phone number is... people have a right to my phone number.
Judge, if that phone number is readily available, if I Google your name, then it's public record. What then keeps me from posting on my website? What if I find your information on Google, and it says Judge Posner's phone number is this, and this is his address, and I put on my website or my blog post, this is Judge Posner, him and I have disagreed multiple times.
I don't see what this has to do with the First Amendment.
Well, because the speech in itself is, if case law and Sheehan, which specifically says that
such a thing as privacy, and the fact that Google, is able to collect people's private information doesn't mean that private information is protected by the First Amendment, or the disclosure that private information is protected by the First Amendment.
Well, then is Google committing a crime of solicitation by putting your information up there? Because that's what happened here. If Google can find your personal...
But you ignore context, right? Suppose you have a website, and what it says is, well, here's this bad person, and we'd like you to go and kill him. Here's his personal information. And then it says, here's another bad person, here's personal information, his personal information. But it doesn't say, go kill him. Now, wouldn't it be reasonable to say, well... It didn't have to say that because it was obvious from the other solicitation that the purpose of, or the other statement on the website, that the purpose of giving personal information is that there may be someone out there who'd like to kill this person. It's a bad person.
That's not a solicitation as to that individual. Maybe the first person where it says, go kill him.
I disagree with you. It's too mechanical because, as I say, you look at the context.
Well, Judge, then what's the difference?
It's as if they've deliberately left off the solicitation, deliberately left off the go kill, because that's obvious from the surrounding solicitations.
But it's not obvious because if you're looking at the other documents and just look them in a vacuum at the headline, in this case, if you actually read the articles, which were presented into evidence, which Judge Adelman did, they were catchy headlines in which no...
What is the purpose, then, of posting this personal information?
Well, as Judge Adelman found, it was so Mr. Hoffman was harassed. He received telephone calls and texts, and harassment is not a crime under any statute, the solicitation statute, or the First, and it gets First Amendment protection.
What telephone harassment is usually a crime.
Well,
federal crime, maybe it's state crime.
Well, in this case, it was not found to be a crime because all that happened and the facts indicated Mr. Hoffman even testified.
Do you think it's unconstitutional to forbid telephone harassment?
Is it unconstitutional or is it a crime?
Is it unconstitutional to forbid telephone harassment?
Depending if it rises to the level of a crime. If I call you...
Wait, that's circular. My question is... Is it unconstitutional to make it a crime, state or federal, to say you can't harass people on the telephone? You can't call them up at midnight, night after night, wake them up, start screaming at them. That's telephone harassment. And is it unconstitutional to make telephone harassment criminal?
Under the facts you gave, no.
No.
But that's not the facts here. The facts were he received a few phone calls and a few texts, and it was harassment. And as the case law cited under the First Amendment, that is all protected. What happened in this case was protected free speech. He put up public information that is readily available. There's case law on that indicates that is
protected. You're saying the only purpose of posting the personal information was that so he could be harassed. Why is that protected by the First Amendment?
because it's not unconstitutional to put up someone's personal information.
When the purpose is to harass the person?
Correct. It's
and you
advocacy.
Think that's protected by...
Protected.
But that means that telephone harassment can't be made a crime.
Well, then, again, going back to the situation...
But you said telephone harassment can be made a crime.
Under certain circumstances, but...
What are the certain circumstances?
If I receive 20,000 phone calls at 12 o'clock at night...
No, I don't think you need 20,000 phone calls to be guilty of telephone
Okay, if I receive 20 phone calls...
How about if you receive... All right, 20 phone calls.
20
right?
phone calls. There was no 20 phone calls in this case. There was no testimony to it.
Answer my question.
Answer your question,
All right,
Your Honor.
20 phone calls is telephone harassment. Now, does the First Amendment protect the person who posted that personal information?
Yes, because if it didn't...
Yes, even though the only purpose was to harass the person?
Well, if he...
And it evoked these 20 phone calls?
Well, if the individual
fine,
who...
Fine, you say. No problem.
If the individual who posted it didn't do the harassing, he
if
can't
telephone,
be...
No, you're wrong. If telephone harassment is a crime, and you solicit that crime by posting personal information, you've solicited criminal activity.
But that's not what happened under the facts in this case, Judge.
Now, at least you agree under my facts that's criminal.
Depending on the amount of harassment, which let's say
no,
we said...
agree.
Yes, it does, Judge. It does. Is three
it
phone calls harassment?
It doesn't depend on the amount of harassment.
Three phone calls harassment, Judge.
It doesn't depend on the amount of harassment, right?
I disagree.
That's ridiculous. How can you disagree?
Judge Williams, I believe you had a
question. What if a person posted, someone should bomb the Capitol, Congress sucks, on a website that they knew was visited by a terrorist? Would that be solicitation under 373?
Under 373, if they are endeavoring someone to actually go do it, then yes. And if there's...
Why don't you answer her question rather than restating it?
I just did answer it.
So,
you didn't say yes or no.
Sorry, Judge.
Say yes or no.
Yeah, so here's the question. Someone posts on a website, should someone bomb the Capitol? Congress sucks. And this person knows that the website is read by terrorists, visited by terrorists. Would that be a solicitation under 373?
That is an under those circumstances, it would be an express solicitation.
So that would be a violation.
Because it's an express solicitation, and if there's the cooperative intent is there, then yes, it would be a solicitation. Because it's not just one element that needs to be shown. There's two elements to the crime of solicitation. One, that there's actually an express or a coded, some kind of solicitation. Now, I have not found any case law that says that, you know, it has to be expressed. And I don't think there is. It can be coded language, but the language has to be there, or somebody has, there has to be intent strongly corroborated that this individual or the person who posts the ad that you put up wants someone to go bomb Congress.
Mr. Shannon?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Ferrara has spent a good time, deal of time on context. So I guess I just want your thoughts on one of the initial postings by Mr. White, which said that everyone associated with the Matt Hale trial has deserved assassination for a long time. In my view, it was clearly just, and I'm sure you're familiar with that.
I am, Judge.
Is, in a temporal sense, do you feel that posting is too far removed from the posting in question here, so that that particular one cannot be read in context for the purposes of this prosecution?
I do, Judge, but I think there's another step to that, and that is that whether or not that even rises to the level that we know that's not a solicitation because he's not telling someone to go do it, but whether or not that rises to a threat is even a question. And
well,
I think
what everyone associated with the trial has deserved assassination for a long time. You think that's just editorial comment?
Judge, I believe so, and I think I have authority, even though not this circuit. The Fourth Circuit in the other William White case, they actually ruled that the statements regarding Mr. Warren, which were used as posts in this case, were not a threat. And even in those posts, it said, Mr. Warren should be dragged out into the streets and shot. Richard Warman is an enemy, not just to the white race, but all humanity, and he must be killed. In that case, that was a true threats case for that count. That was the count where the judge in that matter granted the Rule 29, even though the jury had found him guilty of it. The Fourth Circuit came back and said that does not rise to the level of a threat. And what the Fourth Circuit said is while the two communications for which White was indicted, along with the context surrounding them, may have undoubtedly frightened Mr. Warman, it didn't rise to the level of a threat, and that was affirmed.
Well, I appreciate that Fourth Circuit approach, but is your view that everyone associated with the Matt Hale trial is just too a broader category? It's not specific enough?
It is, Judge, because it's his. If you read the whole context, not just the verbiage that's picked out to be presented, if you read the whole article, that is his editorial opinion or hyperbole. It's his opinion. It'd be no different than someone writing an editorial in the Chicago Times saying everybody associated with Mr. White's case, including the appellate court, should be harmed. It's an editorial piece that someone is giving their opinion, and that opinion is protected.
So when you add up all the specifics regarding Mr. Hoffman, if it was even double that as far as specific, you know, more, mm-hmm. you know, more information, grades in high school, whatever, you would say that none of that could ever reach in the context sense that the government's advancing,
not
enough
the,
to add to create
not
a
the context as presented, because if you look at the overthrow website as a whole, what would have been required of an objective reader, would he'd have to read Hoffman's address and his personal sexual preferences, click through articles that were posted some year and a half, 2 years ago, to come up with this message that the government wants to be considered solicitation. So it's too far removed. Plus, if you look at the articles as a whole that were entered into evidence,
you'd have a much stronger case if that personal contact information hadn't been posted.
I'm sorry, Judge?
You'd have a much stronger case if that personal contact information hadn't been posted.
Judge, if that personal contact information wouldn't have been posted, they would have never charged this case, because that personal information is what they are saying is the solicitation.
Right.
There would be no case at that point. But then, again, well, then, Judge, going back to the situation with the Chicago Tribune, they just recently posted that a man infected with HIV gave his address, gave his home information, bit a cop. What's the difference between that and this? I've given you my personal information, everybody out there who either doesn't like people with HIV or other police officers, because the victim was a police officer, have the ability to go attack them. No one's charging them with the crime.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sand. Mr. Farrar, do you have anything further?
Just in terms of establishing the record, where counsel was talking about the two witnesses presented commenting on the ultimate issue for this jury to decide whether this in fact was a solicitation, the government's understanding of that evidence is a little bit different. On the court's opinion, or in the court's opinion on this matter, on page 23, the court discussed the testimony of that witnesses. It's the government's understanding that those witnesses were merely commenting that the post themselves, the Hoffman post themselves, did not contain an explicit call for violence. They, within the four corners of the Hoffman post, there was no explicit call for violence. The ultimate question for the jury was, of course, not just those posts, but viewing the entirety of the context and deciding whether by an objective standard a solicitation had been made.
But speaking also to the point that Judge Flom raised, I mean, when you look at all of this, I mean, you really have to be quite diligent to go back, click back, click back, click back to the older post about everybody that was involved in the Hale prosecution. I mean, doesn't that create a real problem for you, you know, in terms of all those dots being connected to have it add up to solicitation?
No, Your Honor, for two reasons. One, the case agent testified, well, actually it was uncontested, that all of these posts were contemporaneously available. So they were all within the website. And then in terms of finding them within the website, the agent testified quite clearly that she viewed the posts not in a forensic setting, but while it was live on the Internet, like any user would have access to it, and she was able to find all of these posts without any difficulty. Moreover, it would have been reasonable for the jury to infer.
So she was able to find them when she clicked on.
Correct, Your Honor.
But I mean, they weren't like linked together.
No, Your Honor.
Because of course a link would just pull up automatically all those things, and it would be a stronger case for you if it was a link, wouldn't it?
It would be a more direct case, correct, Your Honor. The two posts that were immediately contemporaneously available that surrounded the Hoffman post were the Kill Richard Mormon and the post having to do with President Obama. But again, the uncontested testimony was that the rest of these posts could be found, and further, it would be reasonable for the jury to conclude that a longtime reader of Overthrow.com would have been influenced by all of those posts and the past knowledge of reading those posts, especially for something that is prominent in the white supremacist community as the prosecution of Matt Hale. So even if it was relying on the dated posts, it would have still been reasonable for the jury to infer. But here, again, that wasn't necessary because of the fact that these were contemporaneously available and easy to find. So
okay. Thank you, Mr. And we thank Mr. Sinan as well. Move on to our second.